Hi, I'm Mark Maron with Stu Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today is hump day. We'll get the lowdown on the ethics complaints against Republican Congressmeister Tom DeLay. Plus, we've got today's presidential palm pilot and the liberal agenda for the day. Good morning, Mark Riley. Good morning, Sue Ellicott.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a little cranky today. It's Wednesday.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that concern you somehow?
Yeah, I'll just move my chair a bit further away.
Really? You're already halfway across the studio. You're going to move it to another room?
I might get to a different floor if you're cranky.
All right, well, get on with it. Get out of here.
Get to cranking.
No, I don't know. I didn't sleep well because for some reason in the middle of the night, the people upstairs decided, hey, this is a good time to do some furniture moving and some housework. Maybe I'll try to reassemble my automobile on the fourth floor apartment.
Really?
I don't know what they were doing. Who the hell knows what they were doing? All I know is I was sitting there. All you can do is speculate in that weird waking consciousness of, you know, why am I not sleeping? Why am I not sleeping? What could they be doing? It's a two-bedroom place. How many times do you have to walk into each room? 40? What's going on up there? Are they playing chess on a giant chessboard in three different rooms? And then I get in today. You know, and I'm not an irritable guy. I feel like I'm a pretty giving person. I feel like that I'm an open-minded person. And these, you know, I keep getting these emails about, you know, talking about religion. And there's some misunderstanding that I'm anti-Christian. I have no problems with Christianity. I have no problems with the Christian faith. I think there's a lot of good things in the Christian faith that teaches people how to be nice to people. If you want to have faith, that's, you know, certainly your option. But I'm being misunderstood here. If you are not going to be critical of this administration's use of religion, exploitation of people's fears, and also the exploitation and appropriation of certain types of Christianity, then you're crazy. And you know, here I'm being accused in one email, which is tremendous. I love this one. For the time being, I will go back to listen. This is all, you know, I've been listening to Morning Sedition for about a month. While the show is generally good, I have to write to tell you that Mark Maron's constant Christian bashing has gone over the line. I'm not Christian bashing. All right, I am just saying that at some point, you got a president here. And this guy, he finishes this. I love this one. I want to listen. Where is it? Oh, yeah. Mark Maron is more irritating than enlightening. I want to listen to someone who can express the liberal point of view without being insulting to those of us who cherish our faith. Yeah. Okay, so he says he's going to go back to listening to mainstream news station in the morning. See you later, Ed. Thanks for hanging out. It's nice having you. Have a good time on the other morning news station because I wouldn't want to be irritating in the morning or make you sort of uncomfortable with the idea that I'm questioning your faith. We have a president that just spoke via videotape, all right, to a congregation of 8,000 Baptists from the Southern Baptist Convention, okay? And he was saying basically he is pandering to them because they want to deny human beings their rights on abortion, on gay marriage. So this is the Christianity I'm talking about. And if you're a religious person of faith and a good Christian, you should do everything in your power to raise awareness of the people that are making you guys look like saps. Because, you know, these guys are going to put this guy in office if they have the opportunity. There are 16 million of these Baptists who want to deny other human beings their rights and make this a theocracy. These are people that believe the Bible literally. Now, Ed, in New Jersey, if you're one of these people, if you have faith, you know, God bless you. I'm glad you have faith. It's important to have faith because that helps people get through their day. But if your faith, you know, leaves you blind to the fact that these people are trying to usurp this government and make this some sort of theocracy, if you're blind to that because of your faith and that makes you get through each day more easily, then you're stupid. And if you're going to get angry at me for raising this topic, you know, there's no one else talking about this in this country. You listen to, you know, conservative talk show hosts every day bashing liberals, bashing everything that this country is supposed to be built on, and we're criticizing a type of Christianity that is dangerous right now, dangerous to this country. You know, you can go listen somewhere else. You want to stick your head in the sand, go ahead. But without an ongoing dialogue about this sort of, you know, rabid, you know, fascist Christianity that this guy is pandering to. These guys, this Christianity, listen to this. This is the Baptist Convention, all right? Today, the Southern Baptist Convention's Resolutions Committee is expected to consider two resolutions dealing with the Christian education. One proposed resolution calls on all Southern Baptists to abandon government school. What does that mean? because it's too liberal, because, you know, they want to separate church and state in favor of Christian education or homeschooling. The other states that public schools are mission fields to spread Christianity and that children may continue attending them. So that means that they're free to annoy other students with their glassy-eyed, you know, sort of weird, you know, belief in fables as truth. And also homeschooling, are these people really preparing for the rapture? What kind of jobs are you going to get with homeschooling? Do you have a diploma? Yeah. Where's it from? Upstairs. My dad made it on Photoshop. I mean, it's ridiculous that I'm being criticized for criticizing a type of Christianity that is a threat to our democracy. And if you don't want to listen to this program because of that, see ya. Go over to NPR where it's more comfortable and you can feel validated in your own unique selfish liberal views. Onward and upward. Sorry, Riley. What do we got for
you? No. Tell us how you really feel.
No, I just want to say, Mark Riley, do you think he really had a bad night's sleep?
Nah.
Wait, you don't think this is a reasonable dialogue to have with these people? It's unbelievable that there's an elephant in the living room, and these people are just sort of like, hey, I'm uncomfortable with that because I believe. Good. Believe all you want, but be critical of these idiots who want to usurp the democracy.
Well, we're going to get into the whole Southern Baptist thing a little bit later on, because that is indeed a scary scenario when you start putting it in concert or putting it next to some of the other things that folks are doing in the name of religion. President Bush, a religionist himself, is doing his level best to convince the world that Iraq will in fact be its own nation come June 30th. However, when it comes to Saddam Hussein, Bush is in full not-so-fast mode. The new Iraqi interim government wants Saddam released to them by the date of the handover, which, Mark, as you know, is now just 2 weeks away.
Are they that afraid that if they release Saddam Hussein that there's a possibility that he'll get out of jail and go, whoa, that was a close one.
Here we go.
I'm back. Where is my cigar? Give me my epaulettes.
I was amazed when George Bush said that he wanted assurances that Saddam Hussein wouldn't be allowed to get back into power. And I thought, yeah, it just really hadn't crossed my mind in the last year, and certainly since they captured him in December, that even if he climbed out of a window in his jail, that anybody would allow him to come back to power.
I think Americans underestimate intellectually and also politically the power of tribal politics in that region. There's a lot of things we really don't understand.
Well, you know, for Bush to want assurances, remember who he wants assurances from. He wants assurances from a U.S.-installed government. These are not people that were voted on by the Iraqi people. These are folks that were put in power by George W. Bush. And now he's saying to them, make sure Saddam doesn't come back. On the other hand, the president seems to have softened his position on radical cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. You may remember not that long ago, U.S. Central Command was saying, we're either going to capture him or kill him, period.
We have
an indictment for murder against the guy.
Now what are they saying? Now
run for office, man.
Yeah.
Which is a surefire way to get killed in Iraq. So, I mean, they're basically just doing it a clever way. It's like, you know, we don't want to kill him. Let him run for office. Yeah, that's it.
Well, what they're saying is that they think al-Sadr ought to form his own political party and contest the elections that are scheduled for early next year. Now, what would happen? How do you think the Americans would respond if al-Sadr did in fact run and did in fact win? Then what?
Well, then they'd have a real...
We got to take over again.
That's right. We're back. How are you?
You're
going to have to step down. It was an interesting idea, but the al-Sadr Hussein ticket is really no good for global politics.
No, they would send in some White House lawyer and say that, in fact, uh-oh, that interim government we imposed, there was a technicality. And, in fact, it did not stand and have to redo the thing all over again.
Maybe we can solve this way.
But clearly...
But
it does seem, Bush is kind of on the run here. When there's a survey that came out, the first survey of Iraqis that was sponsored by the U.S. Coalition Provisional Authority, which was after the Abu Ghraib prison scandal, and it shows that most Iraqis would say they would feel safer if the coalition forces left immediately. I mean, this is dreadful. This is appalling news for Bush's authority in the region, and it's also, to some extent, somewhat baffling. I don't believe that they would be safer. It's just that it's terrifying that they think that they would be. It means that there's basically no control over there.
Hearts and minds are still not won over. Still ahead, the president's Palm Pilot plus the liberal agenda and more here on Air America Radio. Eighteen past the hour. I guess to some of you, that's our theme song. This is Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley is here. Sue Ellicott is here.
Hey.
I am clearly running with the devil. There you go. There you go. There's people, you know, just sort of like, I knew it. I knew it. Ed in New Jersey is like, this is irritating. This is irritating. This isn't enlightening. It's irritating. These people are irritating. Let's go back into this. Speaking of irritating, Southern Baptist. I'm going to have to clarify every time I'm being specific. I'm not saying Christians. I'm not saying all Baptists. Right now, I'm saying Southern Baptists.
Hard shells.
Is that what they call them? The hard shells?
There's kind of a thing back and forth, hard shells. The interesting thing to me about all these Southern Baptists and all these conservatives is that, you know, they talk about, the belief in God and blah, blah. These Baptists have divided themselves historically by race probably more than any other denomination in Christianity.
Wait, let me get this. So the Southern Baptists are also segregationists?
Not segregationists per se, but when Martin Luther King said that the most segregated time in America is 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, he was talking about these
the Southern
people.
Baptists.
Yes!
Well,
these were people who were the underpinnings of segregation for better than two centuries. Now, they've renounced. They're like the Mormons. The Mormons now believe black people are human, and that's all well and good. And these Southern Baptists probably have, you know, probably about the same percentage.
That's the only
concession
the Mormons can make, is that they've accepted that black people are human?
Well, I mean, they may have a proselytizer or two. Maybe I don't want to offend anybody, but the bottom line here is that these are folks who have historically separated black Baptists from white Baptists.
And these are also a group of the Southern Baptist Convention pulled away from the International Baptist Convention, you know, I guess about 25 years ago when they realized that, you know, the rest of the world's Baptists were being a little too Christian and they weren't being, you know, hard enough on things like, you know, homosexuality or being hard enough on congregations that don't believe the Bible as literal truth. You know, forget carbon dating. Forget, you know, real history. You know,
what's that you're doing with your hand?
I'm just trying to think. You know,
because I do the same thing. What's funny about this, and I think you hit on it, is the idea of a literal interpretation of the Bible where nothing in the Bible is subject to question.
Yeah.
Now, change, reinterpretation.
Yeah, reinterpretation. And the problem is that the Bible itself, if you go all the way through it, it is so rife with contradictions, Old Testament to New, one Old Testament book to another Old Testament book. It is in – dare I offend the religious community even more than you have? It's almost irreconcilable as far as I'm concerned in terms of trying to figure out how this contradiction or this statement goes with this statement.
And now they want to pull away from sort of rational culture in certain respects. The homeschooling thing, I mean, that's just one step shy of creating their own militias, of creating their own sort of, you know, congregations that are trying to, you know, almost secede from the union to create a religious state. I just think this is the most dangerous thing happening in America. I think that Bush is pandering to religious extremism in the United States in order to get reelected. I think they want to deny human rights. I mean, that's what they want to do. That is their rallying point. That is their moral authority, is that we don't want gay people to be gay or be married. You know, and we don't want people to have abortions. And these are the only moral stances they have. This is an administration that allows corporate greed to run rampant. Where's the morality there?
But I don't think there's a problem in letting them pull away. I think because they seem so radical and kind of so out of touch with overall kind of liberal feelings through the Baptist World Alliance, let them go. I mean, let these people go. They look marginalized. If Bush wants to deliver a live televised speech to the particular group that look as though they are extreme, that they don't support kind of gay marriage, that they don't support, you know, a changing society, then he looks increasingly marginalized. And why would the mainstream group want them inside it?
Wait, but you're talking about America. I mean, you're talking about all these people on the fence, and this group is 16 million people. I mean, it's 16 million people. And one of the concerns that our listeners have is that by me being critical of the extreme right and fanatic religious extremism in this country, that I'm alienating people of faith. And the truth of the matter is, if there are people of faith out there listening and they think that this is their president, a president that panders to religious extremism and people who are almost secessionists and also tries to get the Pope, he tries to finagle the Pope into supporting his religious agenda and his political agenda, if people have true faith believe that this is their guy, then they've got real problems.
But I think that people will increasingly see that that is an extreme view.
That's what we're trying to do
that
here.
So I think it's a good thing as people leave. It doesn't mean that the Southern Baptists have to lose the annual contribution of this radical or this more extreme group, which is like $300,000 a year. So live
without
the money.
Which is a lot of money when you think about it.
I guess not over their overall budget, but, you know, just let them go. Let them look out of touch. Let President Bush look out of touch.
Yeah, but I think you're underestimating the power of religious fanaticism in this country.
Here's the problem that we have.
Tom DeLay, all these people that pander to, this is the people they're counting on. This is a president who, when he was governor, killed everybody who was on the menu to be killed, did everything he could to make sure guns remained in the hands of people who wanted them, and did everything he could to deny women access to abortion. This was when he was governor, only to guarantee that this particular voting bloc would not ever leave him.
Right, but okay? I still think there is a sizable chunk of the population that is balanced, that is tolerant.
A third
that
of this country votes.
Fair.
A third.
Well,
a third.
Practically a third go to church regularly.
There's a problem, isn't there?
But they're not necessarily the same people.
No.
I just look at what's happening in the European Constitution. The European Union has rejected the requests of some of the new member countries, to recognize Christianity in its new constitution. They just had it. Poland and the Czech Republic were just two of the, I think, 10 countries who just joined the EU, and they wanted some of them wanted a reference to the Christian roots of Europe and an explicit mention of Christianity and God in the constitution, and that's been refused. So I feel that if Europe can do it, and that is a bigger population, the European Union, than the whole of the United States, that people will be reasonable here.
What, are you crazy? This is a country that, literally, because of this administration and the culture war that they're trying to foment here, rejected France as an entire country that boycotted French products.
No,
you're overestimating, first of all, that people in this country care enough to vote properly, number one, and number two, that this administration can't mobilize the most fanatic extreme, and the numbers are there.
But that's all they're trying to mobilize, is the fanatic extreme. I mean, Bush's poll numbers are down. They're still down.
And if you look at evangelical Christians,
there is diminishing support for George Bush and the war among evangelical Christians.
Really? 16 million Southern Baptists are on board.
Right, but that's not the evangelical Christians.
Yes, it is.
No, wait. Here's the problem that you have. If these 16 million people only were dealing with themselves, okay,
yeah,
that's fine.
Right.
Let them do whatever it is. Let them give them South Carolina. But that's not their agenda. They don't want to just regulate themselves. Their agenda is about everybody.
Right.
Their agenda is to change the way everybody lives, not just the way Baptists live.
Right.
Not just the way these 16 million people live. They want to change the way everybody lives.
Right, and the more they try and do that, and the more they look obvious for trying to do that, the more that people who normally don't vote, and then they have allowed this to happen by being complacent and not paying attention, get angry, get motivated, and will go out and do something about it. So I think in the end, the scales would tip over the other way.
Man, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. But let me show you some emails of people that think what we're saying here is, not right. That the people that they are concerned about, people of faith who aren't extreme rightist people, who don't even want us to have this dialogue because they think it's inappropriate and critical of Christianity. I hope you're right.
So I think Michael Newdow will end up being a folk hero for trying to defend the right to have a separation of church and state.
Well, you're truly a romantic, and I hope you're right.
Look, here is let us summarize this by listening to what the president said to these people. He's talking to these 16 million Baptists, and he's not talking to them because he likes them all. Let's hear our president.
My administration is defending the sanctity of marriage against activist courts and local officials who want to redefine marriage forever.
Right. He's basically saying, who hates fags in here? Let me see the hands.
Yep.
Look at that, 8,000 hands.
Yep.
God bless America.
I think it smacks of desperation. I think trying to, making this a kind of a campaign issue, the Republicans trying to, have a vote on this in the couple of weeks before the Democratic National Convention to try and make kind of gay marriage a kind of wedge issue in the 2004 election is kind of pathetic.
I just hope to God that what you're saying is true and that it mobilizes all people of faith and all people
and non-faith.
everybody to vote against this guy because he's pandering to maintain power, and he's doing it in the most heinous of ways.
And the most obvious way. It's just the most simplistic and obvious of ways.
It's like you talk to people, some people don't think that voting even matters. People
Let me tell you something. Unaged. A lot of people who don't normally vote are going to have to come out and vote in order to make that happen. Coming up, the presidential Palm Pilot author Jim Moore on Tom DeLay and the all-important liberal agenda. Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
Three 33 past the hour. Mark Maron on Morning Sedition with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley.
Hey.
Here on Air America Radio. Good morning. It's time for now. I just got this in from my guy in the Oval Office. This is the presidential Palm Pilot. He downloaded it. We got the presidential schedule. He's like, it's on the lowdown now because he's sort of like they're onto him.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is, presidential schedule for today, June 16th, 8 o'clock a.m. Wake up, stay on message. Iraq had ties to Al-Qaeda. Keep at it. We'll make this one work. 9 o'clock a.m. Fly to Florida. Ask pilot to fly over Grand Canyon this time. 10:30 a.m. Address military personnel, Tampa, Florida. Ask if you can parachute off a Hummer. 11:40 a.m. Meet with CENTCOM and SOCOM representatives. Just nod and promise them money. Find out what they do later. 12:15 p.m. Meet with families of fallen soldiers. Try to squeeze out a tear. 12:17 p.m. Remind them that Iraq had ties to Al-Qaeda. 12:19 p.m. Leave quietly, then cut their survivor benefits. 3 o'clock p.m. Resolve Saudi Arabian Al-Qaeda hostage situation. A tax cut should do it. 5 o'clock p.m. Look in mirror. Remind self that Iraq had ties to Al-Qaeda. 6:15 p.m. Publicly congratulate NBA champs the swing state Detroit Pistons for soundly beating Blue State L.A. Lakers. 9 p.m. bedtime prayers. Remind God that Iraq had ties to Al-Qaeda. Joining us now on the phone, a guest who's been here before, Jim Moore, is the author of Bush's War for Reelection and an expert on the quagmire that is Texas politics. We're going to be talking about Tom DeLay, House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, the creepy little man. There are some ethics complaints against DeLay. What are those complaints, Jim Moore? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, they range from using laundering money to put it into political campaigns in Texas to a number of things.
Is this surprising, Jim?
No. I mean, it's not to me. This is the way the game is played in Texas. I think what is surprising, though, at least to me, is that Tom DeLay's sort of arrogance that he could come from Washington and try to mess around with state politics in a way that hasn't been done before in my memory.
And that is by cutting up the state lines to favor Republicans.
Well, look, you're supposed to redistrict congressional districts to reflect the population every 10 years when the census is taken.
Right.
But old Toxic Tom thought, well, you know, we got Republicans in charge up here. Let's go down there and force the issue and get them redrawn and turn Texas into a fully Republican state.
Toxic Tom, give us a little background on this creepy little guy.
Well, I think one of the most interesting stories about this guy occurred during the Republican convention in New Orleans when Dan Quayle was announced as vice presidential candidate. They had the most critical thing that occurred for Quayle immediately was he was accused of dodging the war and getting in a National Guard using family privilege. And they had their spinmeisters come out to make this go away. And somebody started – I didn't hear this, but this was reported widely in the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. I know Molly Ivins has written it. But they are asking DeLay about how he got out of the – service in Vietnam and facing combat, and DeLay said, well, you know, there were so many ethnic minorities signing up for these great jobs in the Army that paid well that patriots like me, white guys like me, were unable to get in and to serve. So I had to stay home.
Affirmative action in the service.
Yeah, it was reverse discrimination for poor Tom DeLay, and rather than going to combat and fight the Vietnamese, he stayed home and he became an exterminator and fought cockroaches and earwigs. You know,
Jim Moore, author of Bush's War for Reelection. Who is filing these complaints against Tom DeLay? How many complaints are there?
Well, it's a guy named Chris Bell, who is a congressman from the Houston area, who was defeated in the primary here this spring. His district had been redrawn, and before he even got to the fall election, he was beaten. But I think what Bell has decided is that since he is not up for reelection, but he still has portfolio, he still has the authority of a congressional office, that he wants to use it while it's still of some value and to force this issue. And it sort of violates this gentleman's agreement that's been going on for several years, that you don't file ethics charges against us, we won't file them against you. And I think that this is going to ratchet up the level of acrimony in Washington.
Hmm. But Jim Moore, also of Bush's War for Reelection, why shouldn't we be seeing more of this? I mean, it's being portrayed nationally as sort of the breaking of an unofficial truce that discourages House members from filing ethics complaints against one another. But isn't this really a good thing for the public if someone kind of dares to speak out in this way?
Oh, I think it's very important. I think it's part of the process. But historically, what has happened is that, with some exception, is that it ends up ends up besmirching someone's reputation and someone's career, and these committees end up getting bogged down in process, and nothing is ever done. Now, if you look back to when this all started, when Jim Wright, the former House Speaker, was chased after by Newt Gingrich for he wrote this book, and it didn't do very well in the bookstores, but Jim Wright pressured political interest groups to buy his book in bulk, and he did fairly well. Newt Gingrich came after him with an ethics charge that ultimately brought down the speaker, and then everybody went after Newt and brought him down, and now they realized that they could go round and round on this and destroy each other over and over, and so they sort of reached this uneasy peace. But I think it's wrong. If somebody is doing the kinds of things that Tom DeLay is doing, it needs to be looked at. And look, it is being looked at down here in Texas by a grand jury and the district attorney.
Okay. Thank God. Thanks a lot, Jim Moore. Great talking to you, as usual. Jim Moore is the author of Bush's War for Reelection, and a great guy to talk to about Texas politics. Now, we want to hear your questions and comments about Tom DeLay and your questions for author Jim Moore, but he's gone. Sorry. I screwed up. 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. We'll take your calls about anything, but we've got some calls coming in about DeLay already, about religion, about my life, Mark's or Sue's, right here on Air America. Hey, what's going on? Mark Maron here on Morning's Edition with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott, Air America Radio. We're taking your calls, 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Got some emails here. Here's somebody who apparently, I bloviated earlier.
I bloviated.
But people still seem to not hear completely what I'm saying. Mark Maron, you're a hypocrite. Your anti-Christian rants you just finished one would be much more convincing if you didn't pay so much attention to religion in general in your atheistic way. You're as bad and intolerant as any other fundamentalist. Get off the religious stuff. You are not convincing, and you are doing the Democrats more harm than good for the coming election. Forget saving the world, you a-hole, and give Kerry, and save Kerry. And by the way, you liberal, I'll listen to whom I please. My program, Love It or Leave It, sounds suspiciously like My Country, Love It or Leave It. If you didn't hear the beginning of what I was talking about and what I was addressing, which was somebody wrote me an email saying he was no longer going to listen to my program, so I said, see ya. It's weird how you revised that and kind of made it into something else like an attack. I love how mean and horrendous liberals can be, you a-hole. Go ahead. Listen to me. Go ahead. Listen. Here, I'm talking right to you. Listen up. And then here's some other stuff. More, hey, Mark, attacking fundamentalism is a life and death issue. Bush is denying us all the benefits of stem cell research because of his religious concepts. Keep up the good work. Hey, Mark, you're absolutely correct about the evangelicals and democracy. I'm so grateful for your morning tirade about this ugly assault on the very guts of freedom. Keep it up. Yeah, Okay, so we got both sides here. We got some calls. Someone tell me to calm down. It's too early, I guess, for me.
Yes.
Liz in Minnesota, how are you?
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm trying to calm down, apparently.
I know. It's hard. And I have to admit, I only caught the tail end of
bloviating?
No. Well, yes, actually, you're bloviating. But I wanted to call because normally I, you know, completely agree with Sue. She does a really good job of keeping y'all in line and being the rational head. But I got it, you know, it's America. And just generally, Americans don't do anything until their rights have been paralyzed, until their rights have been taken, until it starts actually affecting them.
I agree. Well, that's why I think that, you know, when this kind of thing happens, Liz, that it will be the tipping point, that people will finally be motivated because they'll be so darn scared about what the consequences are that they will actually react and act.
How about Matt in St. Paul? Yeah, Minnesota's awake.
I wanted to call, Mark, and tell you that you're right on with the evangelicals and democracy. But one correction, I think Bush actually believes in this evangelical stuff. And there was a caller on, I don't know, maybe it was Franken or something, but he called in and he said, people who have no self-doubt are monsters. And I think that Bush is a born-again. You're right about your recovery stuff. He's replaced alcohol with Jesus. He has no self-doubt, and that makes him a monster. And
it's
he
very frightening.
Believes this stuff.
No, and incapable of contrition, incapable of admitting he's wrong. Thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate the calls coming in. We got Jennifer. Jennifer, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm trying to calm down.
I understand. First of all, let me just say, I really love you guys' radio. I live in Indiana, so I can't listen other than the internet. So I try to catch you whenever possible.
Thanks.
Yeah, but I had a comment about the Southern Baptist Convention, and
right.
I totally agree with what you guys said, because as I was sharing with the guy who screened the calls, my family and I were chased away from a Southern Baptist church about 10 years ago because we were black.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Man. See, that's what Mark Riley was saying.
And I grew up in Indiana, and we're black, obviously, but my mother grew up in the South in Mississippi, and we went about 10 years ago to go to a vacation for a week in Ocean Isles Beach, Florida. Ocean Isles Beach in North Carolina. So we went, and my mother called ahead, and she said, you know, I want you guys to really experience a good, you know, Baptist church like I grew up in.
Right.
So we all piled into the little Lincoln Town Car, and we figured this is important later because we're
the little Lincoln Town Car? Little?
Which one is that?
It's smaller than the stretch SUV.
Yeah, it's a really big car that's obnoxious. But anyway, we pull into this church. My mom called ahead, spoke to the pastor, told we were coming. So as we're trying to find a place to park, this guy comes flying out the church in a suit, mind you, and chasing after us, trying to flag us down. And my siblings and I, we were just like, well, maybe they're trying to, you know, find us a place to park because it's a really big car.
Right.
But my parents pulled over, and they rolled down the window. My dad's driving. And the guy said, can I help you? And we said, well, we're coming here to worship. And he didn't even bother to hide his disgust. I mean, he was literally horrified.
Oh, my God.
And then keep in mind, there's children in the back, and we were all, you know, very impressed. But we're wondering, what's wrong? Did we do something wrong?
Uh-huh.
And the guy told us, okay, where are you from? And my mom said, well, we're from Indiana, and I grew up down south, and I wanted my kids to experience a good Baptist, you know, sermon like I experienced when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
And the guy looked at all of us, and then he looked to the ground, and he said, well, if you're more than welcome to come and worship with us, however, if you feel more comfortable.
There's a black church around the block.
Right, exactly.
Well, he didn't mention the race of the church, but he described perfectly, the church that was down the block.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad said, give us a moment. So he rolls up the window. He talks to my mother. They're laughing. Meanwhile, we're in the back, and we're just horrified.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you couldn't hear a sound.
Yeah.
And finally, my younger brother says, $10 is a black church. And he goes, no. And so he rolls down the window, and he says, you know what?
He should have said right. $10 is a black church.
What did you just say? Sue cut you off. What did you just say? What was the tag on that?
Well, we basically said, you know, my brother was betting amongst ourselves that they didn't want us to worship with us, and $10 is a black church down the road.
Right.
Yeah.
So my dad rolls down the window and says, you know, I think you're right. Maybe we should go to the other church.
Yeah.
And so he gave us perfect directions, and wouldn't you know, it was a black church.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Good for your brother. Did he get the $10?
Well, no, but he gets
said. You got a McDonald's.
But that's so sad.
Well, thanks,
No, but see,
this that's what
is
you're saying,
precisely
Riley.
What we're talking. Martin Luther King was not wrong. Remember, Martin Luther King was a Baptist minister, and that was his statement, that the most segregated time in America was at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, and that caller's experience has been replicated by literally thousands of African Americans across this country.
Right. Stay on the, for her mom.
Stay on the phone, you guys. 866-303-2270. We're going to keep going with this. It's fun here on Air America Radio. Good morning. It's Mark Maron with Mark Riley, Cielo Cop, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. Taking your calls, 866-303-2270. Email, at the risk of incurring Mark's rage, I would like to just point out that most of us believers would agree that the fundamentalist Christian right is very scary and must be stopped. However, he did not limit his comments to those fanatics. Yesterday, he called all believers delusional, and I would take that to include non-Christian religions as well. Is that AA as well? Religions, AA, well, as well. I consider that insulting. In my opinion, Mark is delusion if he thinks he has all the answers. I don't think I have all the answers. I don't think I have any answers, but I'm comfortable with that. I'm comfortable with being lost. Definition, delusion, a false belief strongly held in spite of invalidating evidence, i.e., science. All right, here we go. Mike in Florida, what's going on?
Hey, good morning.
Hey,
Mike.
Love the show, guys.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. I was a member of a Southern Baptist church in Florida back in the late 60s, and my family was good friends with the pastor and his family. And so the pastor wanted to invite black members to attend the church, and some of the more conservative members disagreed. So my dad, being chairman of the Board of Deacons, had to be the one to ask the pastor to resign.
Really?
And did he resign?
Yeah. He left. I mean, he wasn't wanted there anymore, and these were the people with the money that were keeping the church going pretty much. So.
Now, that was back in the 70s, right?
Late 60s.
Late
60s. 69.
You think it's still like that?
Pretty much. Pretty much. The Southern Baptists just left some National Baptist Association because it was getting too liberal for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
too liberal, too black.
So we're getting a sort of a portrait, you know, from a couple of callers that, you know, that there is also some, you know, definitely segregation, definitely some racism within the Southern Baptist Church.
But, you know, here's what I don't understand. They say that they want to have their kids in school so they can proselytize in public schools, right? So now what happens if the kids go out and proselytize black kids, Indian kids, Vietnamese kids, and all of a sudden you have this multicultural swarm that shows up?
Good point, man.
With the Southern Baptists and say, hey, we want in.
Here's the description of who you can go proselytize to.
Yeah.
Ben in Georgia, how are you?
Morning.
Hey,
good morning.
The extreme right religious sect that you're discussing, right. I had the unfortunate privilege of growing up in, and what you're saying is totally true, and I believe that the reason that they are so set in their ways is, one, they're believing an extremely old dogma in the first place, and two, they're easy to manipulate by, you know, manipulators like the Republican Party, because they're single-issue voters. They take one issue of abortion, and they get all mixed up on word games, you know, pro-choice, pro-life, which that argument doesn't make any sense anyway.
Right, right.
And the way that I was able to talk my parents out of the Republican Party, and you got to I had a senator as a grandfather back in the 50s who was a Republican. It was a different time in the party. But the way I finally got my parents to promise me that they would vote for Kerry is when I got to Iraq and I convinced them that it's more important to care about people that are already alive, you know, and have faces and everything than you know, a glob of fetal cells.
Right.
So they can be converted, but it takes a lot of time. And it took 8 months of letters from Iraq to get that done.
Wow, man.
Interesting.
Really, really impressive.
Nice work.
Get them in a book and publish them.
Thanks a lot, Ben. That was really great. You know, and he brings – and the other point is that they are single, you know, issue voters, and they often forget that Bush's economic policies do not service them at all. It's an amazing trick he plays with people of faith.
True.
Certain people of faith. Certain. There's a liberal agenda from Barbara Streisand's compound. Get your pencils. One, give a standing ovation each time you see a bus ad for Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11. Two, support John Kerry and his wife. Buy at least one jar of each of Heinz 57 varieties. Three, celebrate Pistons NBA title because it proves that accused rapists can't play basketball. Four, pressure New York Times to include wedding announcements for group and or interspecies marriages. Of course, the interspecies thing is already happening. Five, today's phrase, when the deli clerk asks for here to go, yell, what does it matter? Bush is going to kill us all anyway. That's it for today. That's our liberal agenda. We'll be back at the next hour.
In the next hour of Morning's Edition, Bush declares victory. Again, a deadline looms for a kidnapped American, the presidential daily briefing, and Recovery Corner. All coming up on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron here along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, Wednesday, Ben Cohen will join us from Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream on the Radio. I got some questions for that guy. He has been a very important part of my life years now. I actually went to the factory in Vermont once. And we've also got, of course, George in Recovery Corner. Good morning, Sue. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, hey. Mark.
Unbelievable, though. Ben & Jerry's ice cream. Unbelievable, man. I can plow through a pint of Ben & Jerry's. Like, you know, I've got to stop myself. But I got some real serious questions. Isn't it amazing how I can shift from alienating the entire Christian population of this great country of ours to, hey, let's talk about ice cream. Yay!
Yeah.
Quick, a couple emails, and I'll go back to ice cream. I spoke with my father on the phone last night. I'm living in the Netherlands, and the election came up. After pointing out all of the bad things that Bush has done, he still plans on voting for Bush in November. His reason, quote, Bush is openly Christian and is bringing back Christian values to government, unquote. Quote, torture is a Christian value, unquote. Bush is a Christian. End of conversation. Nothing else mattered, and I really think my dad is a good barometer of middle America. It scared me. You know, Richard, my dad scares me, too, for a number of reasons, but we're not going to go into that. Mark. You are not putting down Christians, even when you rant about wackos like Bush, Falwell, etc. You're exactly right about them. I used to be a Protestant minister, but the political bull that goes on in organized religions compromised my own faith. Keep up the good work.
Can I just say one thing very quickly about the caller we had in the last hour? The guy who called from Iraq, we forgot to find out. I didn't ask him.
The guy who wrote from Iraq.
Sorry, he wrote from Iraq. No, he called us. We were speaking to him. He called from Iraq, and he said that he'd spent 8 months converting his parents from Republican voters to Kerry.
But he wasn't calling from Iraq.
He wasn't calling
us
from Iraq.
Oh, sorry. No, no. He had been in Iraq, and he'd written to his parents over 8 months. Sorry, yes, you're right. And I wanted to, can you please email or call us in and let us know how to get in touch with you? I think you should write a book about the conversion of your parents from Republican voters, from Bush voters, to Kerry, how you convinced them that live people were more important than stem cells.
And Sue sees a profit opportunity
in
being a professional journalist. She wants to ride your back to success.
That would be a great quick book.
She's got friends. I got another email here. I may be accused of trying to program your show or possibly your life, but I have a request. I wish you wouldn't use the words retard and retarded to describe the right. This isn't just political correctness. My sister has Down syndrome. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to defend it. I mean, I like the word retarded, you know, and I'm not using it, you know, because I'm talking about a retarded person. I think you can use it a couple of ways, but I am sensitive to what you're saying, and I don't want to upset your sister. Okay. Here we go. I am moving on into...
You're just a torrent of emotions this morning, aren't you?
I'm getting worked up because, like, there's something about the word retarded that... That is just very loaded.
I know.
And it's something we grew up with.
I know.
And it's a weird thing because it was something like when I was a kid, you know, you didn't think twice about using. And, you know, as time went on, you realize that it isn't sensitive because there are some people that, you know, are retarded.
But my parents were very strict about certain things that I couldn't use. But that word retarded was not one of them.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it was just, I miss the word. Anyways. Moving on, the Saudis, who give us our oil and our enemy, apparently, you know, this whole thing that you're going to talk about now. Oh, I was going to finish talking about ice cream. I'll talk about it later. All right, let's go from ice cream to oil and hostage taking.
Oil and hostage taking.
Go ahead. Lay it out for us,
identifying himself as American hostage, Paul Johnson from New Jersey, is on a videotape posted online Tuesday. Johnson, an employee of Lockheed Martin, has been missing since Saturday in Saudi Arabia. Gunmen threatened to kill him within 72 hours of the release of the videotape.
God, I really hope that doesn't happen.
Unless numbers of imprisoned insurgents are released by the Saudi government. Now, I heard one report that said they were literally talking about hundreds of prisoners, because they're talking, I believe, from three different prisons. it doesn't look like the Saudis are buying. U.S. intelligence officials say they're taking the warning seriously, but Saudi officials have long said and restated yesterday that their policy is not to negotiate with terrorists.
Right. Yeah, if we get another Nick Berg situation on tape here, it's just going to be horrendous for the world. It's just horrible because this Saudi issue, at some point, Americans are going to have to address this. George Bush personally is going to have to address this. I mean, all the hijackers who crashed into 9/11 were Saudis. They've been funding terrorist groups.
Most of them.
They've been bankrolling terrorist groups through one way or another for years, and they ride this fine balance. Can you talk a little bit about that, Riley? We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah, they walk a line. On the one hand, the Saudis have been the chief funder of fundamentalist religious schooling throughout Africa, and in fact throughout the Middle East, in places like the Sudan, Chad, and other places with Muslim populations, they have set up these schools, and in fact did so in Afghanistan as well. It was Saudi money that funded all that. Yet, on the other side of the equation, they maintain a decent relationship with the West, as evidenced by the fact that they allowed the U.S. military to set up bases there during the first Gulf War, something that the fundamentalists, who they funded, have never forgiven them for.
And if you read Craig Unger's book, I mean, this relationship, it was almost single-handedly nurtured by the Bush family with the House of Saud in modern times. I mean, through the Houston oil connection, there were businessmen that the Bush family was in cahoots with then. And now there's trillions of dollars of their money in the global economy, in the U.S. economy, and they now have the power. They probably have the power to collapse our economy in a matter of days if they wanted to.
If they wanted to, and the Saudis are walking that fine line because it is extremely – their relationship with the United States is an extremely profitable one for them. They look like good guys, but the cost of a gallon of gas around my way went down 2 cents the other day. And people are going to say, well, that's because Bandar said that they were going to increase production. You remember our good friend Prince Bandar? Yeah, him.
He doesn't have as much influence as he thinks or as he would like, given that there's acts of sabotage against Iraqi pipelines and, in fact, that their oil minister was assassinated. I mean, all of that is deliberately a ploy by insurgents, by anti-coalition forces in Iraq to kind of mess up Saudi Arabia supremacy, or you mess up the supply of oil, and to make the transition incredibly complicated.
Yeah, how does that mess up Saudi Arabia's supremacy?
Well, sorry, just that Saudi Arabia doesn't have the great influence it does. I mean, that may not be the intent, but in fact, that Prince Bandar can say whatever he likes about trying to keep oil prices down, but when you've got people blowing up pipelines in Iraq and disrupting,
so he has. Oh, you mean in terms of controlling the price of oil?
Yeah, he doesn't really have as much say as he would like, but it does point to one of the big flaws in the Bush administration's approach in trying to establish democracy in the Middle East, and that is by kind of glomming onto or concentrating on the wallet of the Middle East, which is Saudi Arabia, rather than looking at somewhere like Egypt, where as the sort of intellectual and political center for 75 kind of million Arabs, and using Egypt as a way to try and kind of promote democracy in the region. It just shows how the administration's foreign policy toward the Middle East is just so messed up.
Well, it's interesting that one of the neocon agendas for the great manifest agenda of the neocons is to completely detach from Saudi Arabia, both militarily and for oil, which I don't understand how that's going to work.
Well, see, again, the Saudis' relationship with both their Middle Eastern neighbors and the United States is one that has them walking this fine line and essentially doing things that on the one hand infuriate Americans and on the other hand infuriate their fundamentalist neighbors. Mm-hmm. And this now is starting to catch up to them in that their fundamentalists inside their own country are now taking action against Americans because they simply do not like a Western presence inside. Now, when you look at this historically, and I think sometimes people have to step back and think, how has America portrayed Arabs over the last century or so, certainly during the last 90 years since they started putting images on film?
Right.
The fact of the matter is you start looking at films from Casablanca
with
on
large curved swords
and robes and always cunning and trying to figure out a way to stab somebody. I mean, we kind of grew up with those images. And we may find them repugnant as Americans, but imagine what it must be like for Middle Easterners who are having an awakening sense of self to be told, well, look, this is how these people think of you. This is how these people believe you are without knowing you, without really understanding what your culture is like, without understanding that there was a culture in Iraq and Iran that predates America by thousands upon thousands of years.
They invented mathematics, didn't they?
Yeah.
Then the I don't know which of the Arab countries.
Writing. Iraq invented writing.
And yeah. Mathematics. Wasn't the Egyptians or the... I'll find out.
One
I
of
don't
them.
Know that one, but I'm thinking it was true.
Now, we haven't gotten yet to the President Bush declaring victory again. And you know, we'll get to that shortly.
If you declare it hard enough and for as many times as you can, it might actually stick. Yeah. We'll be back. Still ahead, Ben Cohen from Ben and Jerry's. Yay, he's going to give us ice cream. And up next, a dream diary right here on Air America Radio.
Dream on.
Past the hour, morning sedition. Mark Maron here, calming. Mark Riley there.
Hey.
Wise, Sue Ellicott, informed.
Hello.
We are here to help on Air America Radio. Here's my dream diary. This is the last until I go to my therapist tomorrow, and this is last night's, of course. It's thematically appropriate. So I'm dead, and I'm in atheist heaven. It's a place with no Pat Robertson, no American Family Council, no extremist clerics, no Easter Bunny, no Rosh Hashanah, no Tammy Faye, no Brahma, no Vishnu, no Shiva, no Brigham Young, no Pope, no St. Patrick's Day. There's none of that heavenly white light crap. Everything is beige, soothing, rational. This is Nirvana, only I don't believe in Nirvana. But here's the shocker. It turns out there is a God after all. My world is officially rocked, so I have to talk to him. I have questions, to say the least. So I meet with his secretary, who looks like Angela Lansbury. She says, you can meet him, but don't mention that cyst on his forehead, and he's put on a few pounds, so ixnay on the at-fay. So I go into a room, there's God, sitting in a cubicle, not even an office. He has cat posters and a wilting ficus and sinus trouble, and we get in the picture. I say, God, I don't really believe in you, so I'm sorry. Just curious, why'd you let me in? And in this little voice, he says, because I'm Mr. Forgiveness. Walk all over me. Truth be told, I don't believe in me all that much. Look around. I created only one habitable planet out of 9 in the solar system, and it's not even the big planet. And then there's Earth. Wow, is that screwed up? I can't even control the weather. Blazing heat here, ice there, droughts here, tornadoes there. What kind of divine order is that? I say, so you're not all-powerful? He says, Mark, I have a cubicle and a dying ficus. Try to be nice to me. I say, okay, one last question, and I'll go. What's the point of religion? God sighs and goes, look, people want to believe that I'm Mr. Macho, who only listens to them, that I'm a slot machine that gives out salvation. If it were up to me, I'd flush them all and start over. You know, I did that once before, but, I mean, who would finish the paperwork? I woke up, and my bed was filled with aluminum foil. Oh, my God.
Ooh. But was there any ice cream in atheist heaven?
Well, we're going to find out. Man, Ben from Ben and Jerry's going to talk to me about making the flavors.
Oh, there you go.
Important stuff. But he's not here now. He's coming up later, right?
He is.
No, he's coming up later. Coming up now.
Yeah.
Our president.
Wow.
Bush. Who should have
exciting.
Known better than to declare victory in May of 2003. Has declared victory in June of 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Can we have a listen? Don't we have some sound?
Yeah, that? He says that Afghanistan is in the win column. He was joined on the White House Rose Garden by Afghan President Hamid Karzai, the Western stylish Hamid
Was
Karzai.
He wearing a funky hat?
No.
Oh.
No. He was, his dome was shiny.
Wow.
As a matter of fact. While acknowledging that there is much still left to do, Bush was bold in chalking one up for what he calls the good guys.
Coalition forces, including many brave Afghans, have brought America, Afghanistan, and the free world its first victory in the war on terror. Afghanistan is no longer a terrorist factory sending thousands of killers into the world.
No, they've outsourced that to Iraq.
Iraq, yeah.
It's just become a heroin factory.
Now, just remember.
Yeah, the poppy pipeline is open.
Remember that he said that. Remember that the man has declared victory, as he declared victory on the deck of that aircraft carrier just over a year ago in Iraq. And
Mission
we see the quagmire that, And now he's declared victory in Afghanistan. Now, remember, Hamid Karzai is up for election in September of this year.
Who's he running with?
I have no idea. I have no idea
What's
who he's
the
running
picket?
With, how he's running with. He is now technically the interim president. He's chairman of a 29-member governing committee and leader of the interim government. He was declared the leader on December 5th of 2001. He also worked, and, you know, all these guys got these side gigs that are very interesting. He worked as a consultant for the oil company Unocal, or UNOCAL.
A consultant for an oil company. Yes. Imagine that, and he was appointed by Bush. Let me see if I can do some math on that. Do we have the Saudi Arabian abacus to do that math?
Well, he's also often described, this is in my notes, as westernized and stylish. But it was so hot
in
the
Rose
Garden yesterday.
How stylish do you have to be to run a country?
Well, he had to take off that very stylish cloak that he wears all the time. Kind of makes him look like Dracula with
his hat?
With a hat. No, the hat he didn't wear.
Okay.
But usually has this cloak that he wears, you know, over his shoulders. It was so hot in the Rose Garden. Apparently, hot and humid. It hit like 90 and 90. So he had to take the cloak off.
It's interesting about this this president and declaring victory. This is an administration that believes if they keep declaring things, that eventually people will believe it. It's like declaring that the Al-Qaeda-Iraq connection.
Exactly.
That it's a declaration.
It's like the reverse of that thing. If a tree falls down in the forest and you don't see it, did it really fall? With Bush, it's like, if I just keep on saying that something's a victory, even if it's not, if I say it, is it? It's true, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's exactly true. And Karzai, it's interesting. I just found out that math was invented in Babylonia, along with the language, and also supposedly where the Garden of Eden is, which is now
That's
Iraq.
Not on Long Island, right?
Yeah,
oh,
no.
Not that Babylon.
The Garden of Eden is now sadly grown over.
Mesopotamia.
Well, here's the cost of victory in Afghanistan.
Yes, sir.
Nearly 500 people have been killed across the country in violent acts this year.
By the Warlord Council?
Well, by whomever. Yeah. I don't know that they've actually brought anybody to justice. But the president announced a new set of initiatives aimed at helping the government of Hamid Karzai. Interestingly enough, and somebody pointed this out as soon as he ran him, curbing poppy cultivation was not on Bush's list.
Are you kidding? That's a gold mine for that country. Always has been. I mean, that was, you know, the Taliban stifled it a bit. They had it going, but they turned it down a lot. But now it's like back to, George Senior production levels.
But what are his people in the ONDCP saying about this, the Office of National Drug Control Policy? They're supposed to be the ones fighting a war on drugs. And here comes Bush with an initiative for a country that produces 75%
billions
of the world's opium, and there's no plan.
Billions of dollars.
Right, and they haven't been tough enough against all the drug warlords there.
But
here's the one thing that, you know, bugs me about Bush saying victory most of all, is that he can use that word as much as he'd like. They don't have Osama bin Laden.
No, they don't.
I mean, wasn't that part of going into Afghanistan? Wasn't that one of the ultimate goals, was to get Osama bin Laden? That's all been sidelined now. We don't hear him say that is his goal anymore. They've tried to.
No. As a matter of fact, didn't he
they
say
tried to argue it's not even that important.
Yeah. Wait till October.
Yeah, they're going to bring him out of cold storage.
Yeah, now, the thing about the drug thing, the opium thing, it's like, don't you think that money coming in from the opium is going into rebuilding Afghanistan? I mean, somehow or another, either politically or, you know, even structurally. I mean, that's a lot of money, dude. And that's a very tribal country.
But see, this is the kind of dog poop that America steps in almost every time Bush tries to do something with regard to foreign policy. The fact of the matter is, you may hate their guts, but the Taliban really did interrupt poppy cultivation.
Right.
They really did.
They turned it down a lot, and what was still left, they were using to build their terrorist factories.
Factories, yeah. Now,
and now it's just the old greedy warlord guy.
Now it's back in the hands of the warlords, which means it's back in the hands of the pipelines, the pipelines that have already been established. You know, opium trade routing has been going on for thousands of years on this planet. So these people have established trade routes that the Taliban disrupted. Now the trade routes are back in place. The warlords are back in place.
Isn't that baffling, though? Like we were saying before, it's like intellectually and just culturally, I don't think Americans can even wrap their brains around the idea that there are trade routes that are thousands of years old.
That's right.
That are up and running. Thousands of years old. These are trade routes. They were running opium during the Spanish Inquisition, for God's sake.
That's right. People have needed to be medicated for a long, long time.
Yes, and I mean, Stevie Ray's first two albums were great thanks to Afghanistan.
Isn't this today the day that the State Department is supposed to receive that anti-Bush foreign policy letter from all of the diplomats?
Yep, yep.
Whom, so,
today,
you know, who are they trying to kid?
The Gang of 26?
Yes.
It's more than that, I think. But there's a letter that comes from ex-diplomats, many of whom were appointed by Republican presidents, and who this is not a kind of a democratic attack on Bush. It's bipartisan. It's people who know their stuff.
Old military
worked out
people.
There around, military,
from three different administrations.
Absolutely. And this is the day that they're delivering their letter criticizing Bush's foreign policy. The State Department has said that they are open to reception.
Yeah, and then they, didn't they also say...
What does that mean, that we will actually you know, accept delivery of this thing? But they're not going to acknowledge that they're wrong.
But then they say, like, yeah, these people were once politicians and people that had jobs, but, you know, we'll hear what they have to say. They don't really have any power.
Disgruntled ex-employees,
exactly.
That's what they are.
Yeah, but they're people who have perspective and who know the world, who have been out there and kind of traveled, speak foreign languages, something totally alien to Bush and his kind of inner circle.
Perspective is not what this administration enjoys.
You mean everybody needs a good abrogado? Wasn't real. just
gracias.
When we come back, the Presidential Daily Briefing Plus, Ben and Jerry's co-founder Ben Cohen on his new book, 50 Ways You Can Show George the Door in 2004. This is Air America Radio.
Good morning, it's Mark Maron here on Air America Radio with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott.
Hey!
This is Morning Sedition. That's a weird sounding guitar in that music thing. The guy coming up here, we got a guest on the phone, he's one of my heroes. I've actually taken the pilgrimage to the Ben & Jerry's factory in Burlington, Vermont.
Did you do it on your knees?
Out of respect. And they give you a little taste of ice cream. At the time I went, they were just coming up with low-fat ice creams. Ben Cohen is a co-founder of Ben & Jerry's, a president of TrueMajority.org, the online activist organization. His new book is 50 Ways You Can Show George the Door in 2004. Good morning, Ben, my hero.
Yo, Mark, what's happening? I am not worthy.
Dude, let me tell you something, man. I got a couple of questions. I think it's high time to make available the half gallon. Come on, kick it up. You know, sometimes a pint isn't enough to fill the void within me, okay? But when you buy two pints, you feel like, yeah, I got problems, right? But if I bought a half gallon, I could say, I'm going to save a little for tomorrow and see how much I need it in one sitting. The other question, quickly, is this. How much control you got over the flavors, Ben?
These days, you know, not much at all.
Okay.
I'm responsible for the good old classics.
The classics right now? Dude, they're putting too much stuff in there. Listen, I saw a flavor the other day. I swear to God, it was banana ice cream with caramel fudge chunks, cheddar goldfish pennies, and a comb. What is that?
Well, you know, there is an art to creating ice cream flavors, and sometimes some people get carried away and they think, well, the more junk we can throw in, the better
right.
It is. But
you guys had the balance, man. The Cherry Garcia,
the
genius.
Cherry Garcia,
genius.
Exactly. I was going to bring that up.
Unbelievable.
I mean, we went through I think it must have been like 2 years worth of research to get exactly the right cherry.
What fun that was!
Right, oh, that's right, the Bing cherry, right?
Well, it's a dark sweet cherry. It's
not your
funny red ones.
I love it. Hey, tell us about the book. Let's get into figuring out what, you know, what our agenda is here and your agenda is here is to get this guy out of office.
Well, you know, there have been so many books coming out about how bad Bush is. And, you know, we all know how bad Bush is. Everybody's always talking about how bad Bush is, how bad Bush is.
Yeah.
But the key is to figure out how to get him out of office and to get active in getting him out of office.
Okay.
And this book, 50 Ways You Can Show George the Door in 2004, gives you the nitty-gritty stuff that you need to actually stop talking about how bad he is and actually start putting some effort and some work into getting him out of office.
Lay it on us. Give us a few hints. I got the book right here in my hand. I'm looking at it as we talk.
Well, you know, I mean, the beautiful thing about it is that regardless of what your personality type is, your skill set, your inclination, or the amount of time you have available, there's something in this book that not only you can do, but you will want to do to get rid of the dude. So, you know, it goes all the way from registering people to vote to encouraging people to vote by mail-in ballot. To
a little activism and a little bit of what was the cup and the fence idea? I just briefly saw that.
Oh, well, that's a beautiful thing. You know, the cup and the fence, you know, over these overpasses going over, you know, lots of roads and highways, they have these chain link fences erected.
Right.
And what you do is you take these colored plastic cups
Right.
You know, they're usually out there, you know, they're at the supermarket. I mean, they're the kind of things that people serve beer in at parties.
Well, an empty half-pint container of Ben and Jerry's fit? Or?
Well, you know, I mean, the beauty of our, you know, containers is that they will eventually degrade.
These plastic.
The beauty of the plastic pie, the plastic cups is that they won't.
And so you put those
in. You can put them in, and you can form letters.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And, you know, so you can form
letters. Bush sucks, Bush out, get out Bush, Bush no more.
Vote Bush out, yeah, that kind of thing. Or just vote. You know, I mean,
oh, yeah,
we can just get our guys to vote this time around. The guy is out the door easy.
Okay, hey, hang on. We want to hear more of your ideas. We want to get some ideas from our callers. We'll put you on the phone with them. 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Sedition at Air America Radio. We're going from God to ice cream. Good morning, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. We've got Ben Cohen from Ben and Jerry's on the phone. He's just written a book, 50 Ways You Can Show George the Door in 2004. He wants to talk to you. We want to hear your ideas. Hey, call us, 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. I know you're having a hard time making the shift from ice cream, from God to ice cream, but I think we can do it as a big umbrella tent that the liberals are. We can involve both God and ice cream in our tent. Here's today's presidential daily briefing. It's the highly classified top secret document that crosses the president's desk every morning. Today's PDB from the intelligence community is titled House of Sod. Is it worth the embarrassment? Mr. President, it's come to our attention that your close relationship with the Saudi royal family is becoming a threat to the credibility of your presidency. We realize it was necessary to fly key members of the House of Saud out of the U.S. right after 9/11, despite the fact that most of the terrorists were themselves Saudis. Still, it provided a public relations challenge. And now there's been a series of kidnappings that shines an even harsher light on this embarrassing relationship. If you have doubts about how damaging a hostage situation could be, we have two words for you. Jimmy Carter. Hello. Clearly distancing yourself from the Saudis will be difficult as they control the world's largest reserves of the precious, precious liquid that fuels your very being and, not coincidentally, your personal fortune. Our recommended course of action is this. The United States should unilaterally invade the country with the world's next largest reserves of oil, depose their dictator, and attempt to install a Western-style democracy. It may be necessary to create a pretext for invasion, such as the presence of weapons of mass destruction, ties to Al-Qaeda. The reasons are important. Aren't important. After a quick occupation, welcomed by the locals, we will have a quick and easy access to all the oil we could ever need, provide lucrative rebuilding contracts for our friends at Halliburton, and intimidate other Arab nations with the might and efficiency of the American military. The sheer genius of it boggles the mind. We'll get back to you more with the details. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security. In the longest PDB ever read on our air.
Speed read.
Yeah, it was speed read. I apologize. Sometimes I go too fast, and I need to slow down.
No, it was intelligible.
Ben, are you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here, man.
All right. All right. By the way, Sue, it was 26 people.
Okay, 26,
I just wanted to clear that up. Because, like, I'm doing a lot of homework here to make sure I'm getting the facts right.
You know,
and then
I was
you just
confused.
Automatically go, oh, there's many more.
No, I tell you, it's because there was 50-something, 52 or 53 from Europe who had a memo to him a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. So Spencer.
Hey.
How are you, Spencer?
What's up, Spencer?
How are you, buddy?
Hey, just doing fine. How you guys doing?
Good. What's up, man?
Well, as important as it is to read Ben's book, it's also important we get everybody to read the papers.
Yeah, yeah.
Get out there and to keep track of not just the federal, but also their local government
right.
on the issues.
Right. Thanks a lot for your call, Spencer. Right, Ben?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's good to read the paper, but it is better to read my book because we know what's in the paper is all this ridiculous stuff that Bush has been doing.
Yeah.
But what's in my book is how to get rid of the dude.
Right.
Ben, let me ask you. I have my own method for doing voter outreach on Election Day. I kind of call my family across the country, particularly those in California who might not be too pointed toward the ballot box, and I try and get them all out. But how can people – you can talk about, on the one hand, registering people to vote – but how do you spur voter turnout?
Well, you know, we think that getting the word out that we need to vote this time around is the way to do it and to get people talking about it. And one of the my favorite methods in the book is going around on a bar crawl. You know, you take a few of your friends, and, you know, you remember in your youth you used to go around to bars? Well, you know, it's amazingly enough, it's still kind of fun. And, you know, you get these Show Bush the Door cardboard coasters that are available at True Majority Action at our cost.
Mm-hmm.
And you get your Show Bush the Door cocktail napkins that are also available at TrueMajorityAction.org at our cost. And you have a bunch of your friends, and you go around from bar to bar, and you just kind of drop by the tables and drop off these napkins and coasters.
Beautiful.
And, you know, it gets people talking about it and the need to actually vote this time around.
Ben Cohen, co-founder of Ben & Jerry's and president of TrueMajority.org, the online activist organization. Can't you give out some of your ice cream to people who come out of the voting booths? Isn't that a way to spur voter turnout, or are you not allowed to do that?
Well, you know, I mean, there are some kind of strict laws about that act, about things like that. I'm not exactly sure what the deal is. It's been discussed.
Just one scoop.
At the company, and, you know, you should know that I don't own the company anymore, that, you know, it's been bought by Unilever.
Well, Unilever, I have to say, half gallons, please. We're taking another call. Dimitri's in Vermont. Dimitri, how are you?
Hi, I have a two-part question. I was wondering why Ben and Jerry's chose to sell to Unilever, who does use bovine growth hormone in Europe. And I was wondering why, as soon as possible, Unilever / Ben and Jerry's decided to close the plant in Springfield, when Springfield has had the highest unemployment rate in the state.
Thank you very much for your call. Ben, we got some serious stuff to talk about.
Well, yeah. You know, I tried very hard to prevent the sale of the company to Unilever. I wanted to keep it independent.
I guess the question there is, are you still talking to Jerry?
Oh, yeah. Still talking. We're still good friends. We just put a little used boat together. We were out on the lake.
So you got bullied by your shareholders? How did it work out then?
Well, the thing was that, you know, I tried to resist this sale.
Yeah.
I lost, and the board of directors of Ben & Jerry's felt like legally they had no choice but to sell the company to Unilever because the price for the stock that Unilever was offering was
too good
so
to pass up.
Above what it was trading at.
That's the corporate situation. There's your answer, Dimitri. Rick in Pittsburgh. Rick, how are you?
Yeah, Ben, I wondered if there's absolutely any ability of anybody in America to respond to anything. If they haven't thrown these guys out already, could there possibly be anything more we could give them as far as information?
Okay, Ben.
Well, I mean, the issue is that in last election, in 2000, half the people on our side didn't vote. And even if you go so far as to look at people who are as committed as joining and paying dues to organizations like the Sierra Club and the League of Conservation Voters, half of those members did not vote last time around.
Wow, so we've got to get mobilized people.
Yeah, and I think that in terms of what Bush has been doing, in terms of the environment and, of course, the war, in terms of the tax cuts, I think that, you know, this is uniting the left, the people on the other side, as it's never been done before. And, you know, the key is that each one of us that wants this guy out has to do more than they did last year.
Right.
So if you didn't vote last year, you got to vote.
And
if you did vote last year, you need to get active and, you know, contact the major organizations that are working on this, Americans Coming Together and Project Vote. And they'll tell you how to help.
Ben, thank you so much for all you've brought to culture with your ice cream and now with your book. There's a lot of cute things in here and a lot of good advice. The book is 50 Ways You Can Show George the Door. Thanks for being here, Ben.
All right. Nice all being right. with you guys.
You take it
care,
easy.
Ben.
That's
two
Ben
words
Cohen
for Ben.
From Ben
Half
and Jerry's.
Gallon.
Yeah, half gallon is right. Bring it on. And we need more. Apparently, we need more pistachio and Bayside, Unilever.
Hey, by the way.
That's for Chris, our board operator.
There's one really great Bushism in this book. I just want to run it before we go to break. I need to be able to move the right people to the right place at the right time to protect you, and I'm not going to accept a lousy bill out of the United Nations Senate.
Classic. We'll be back with Recovery Corner on Air America Radio. Morning Sedition here. Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott, Air America Radio. Thank you for all your emails. Thank you for all your calls. Some guy just told me that I should use a little more aplomb.
Aplomb.
In dealing with emails on the air as opposed to getting all worked up.
You know, you're different.
That's going to work. He's making another coffee.
But he's different because Marin doesn't get worked up by phone calls. When people call here and disagree with him, he is rational. He's level-headed. It's the email. It's the printed word.
You can be a lot more mean in the dark by yourself. When I got a human being on the phone talking to me like a human being as opposed to writing an email. You know what? I need to do this.
Save
I'm it. Mark. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
Yeah, in Recovery Corner, I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. Today, as always, reaching out to my sponsor, George W. Buddy, yesterday I showered you with praise, all right, for not spitting on Clinton, but no sooner did those words leave my lips and I see you on a big screen telling the Southern Baptist to support a constitutional ban on gay marriage and oppose stem cell research and generally whipping up the troops for the culture wars. George, Buddy. You're supposed to turn to your higher power for support in conquering your disease, not to provide you with shock troops to help impose your apocalyptic vision on the rest of the world. Come on, man. You need to use your faith to carve out a secure place for yourself, and that place is not leering down at us from a screen like Big Brother. I mean, your higher power isn't everyone else's higher power, and our higher power is not you, hence the term higher. Don't backslide on me, buddy. All right? Yesterday I saw a better man wearing your clothes. Remember, bend your knee. Bend your knee before you bend your elbow. One day at a time. Denial's not a river in Egypt. First things first. Get to a meeting. Really. Get to a meeting. That's
I like
it for that.
A better man wearing your clothes.
There you go.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah, so, all right, get on the mic. That's how you do radio. Here we are.
Not to worry.
But you're right. You know, when people do call, you know, I like talking to people. Yeah. I really do like talking to people. And I don't mind the emails either, but I think the tone of an email is much harder to decipher. You know what I mean? It's not so hard when they use the word a-hole in it. You know what I mean? Generally, I know, like, hey, this isn't a fawning email when it says you bleep an a-hole.
You don't think it's an affectionate term of a-hole?
Yeah, but this cat was, he was real nice. He was like, you know. He's like, hey, Marin, I say this because I love your show for its political content, for the eclectic but somehow complimentary interaction between you and the cackling geezer Riley and that cheeky bird Sue.
Oh, Lord.
And, of course, you're for your tweet, weird tweet. Humor. Yeah, cheeky bird. You're a cheeky bird.
Cackling geezer?
It's a good show.
I'd
rather be the cheeky bird than the cackling geezer.
But, dude. Right? Dude, you completely lose me when you throw a tantrum over negative feedback, whether from confused Democrat Christianists or to traitor baiting righties in sheep's clothing. Confront your critics with a little more aplomb.
Aplomb.
Your unhinged tirades lack the cohesion and focus necessary to overwhelm the emotional ignorance of your adversaries. Greg, thanks. P.S., please, more making fun of Sue's funny accent. Well, hello.
He'd work if he does.
And my cackling geezerness?
In the Pentagon.
Oh,
in the Pentagon today.
Banal. I love that. Banal.
Banal.
Banal, as opposed to banal, which is how we pronounce it here in the Midwest.
Good morning. Good morning. That's the machine. I'll do the real one. Good morning.
There you go.
Oh, man. You guys are great.
Oh, toys for boys.
I'm full of love now after talking to Ben Cohen.
Yeah,
is this you're fantasizing about buckets load of ice cream?
No, he's fantasizing about a truck rolling up in front of his house with the thing on it. All you know, he opens it up, all the dry ice smoke comes out, and there are like half gallons of Ben and Jerry's.
And he's going to go in. He's going in his hazmat suit to prevent freezing, prevent
the truck,
body frost.
Naked Victoria's Secret models.
That's right.
Holding half gallons. The new half gallon.
Uh-oh, the sequel to Dream Diary.
Hey.
Hey, we go into Fantasy Diary. That
I can
be
step
better.
Into that. Well, can I follow you in that fantasy?
Sure, man.
Because I could go for it.
I wish I could eat it all day long. You know, it's like I have such resentment for you know who I hate more than anybody? And I don't hate a lot of people, but people who say things like this. I don't know. I could eat anything I want. I can eat it, and I just don't gain weight.
Yeah, I know.
They're lying or they're under 20. They're certainly not over 40.
Some people just have this weird metabolism, you know? I mean, and I, like, if I could eat ice cream all day and bacon and ice cream, not at the same time, but if I could have bacon, ice cream, and cakes, and pies, and pork, I would, and just like just sit, I would, you know, I would do nothing but just sit there and eat all day long.
Most
and people,
though,
like, people would be like, "What are you doing? What do you think I'm doing? I don't. This doesn't hurt me. I don't gain any weight, and my body is not affected by this. I'm eating. Sit down, eat a little."
Well, I tell you, I invented the bacon and peanut butter sandwich back in the day.
You invented it? That wasn't
I invented
Elvis?
It. No, it wasn't Elvis. Al Gore didn't invent the internet. I invented bacon and peanut
butter.
There you
go. Sandwich. See, Riley's been around a while to have invented a sandwich.
Okay.
I'm a cackling geezer. I've invented a lot.
So from here on out, call it the Riley. It's called the Riley now.
How about the
bacon.
Deep fried Mars bar? That kind of pretty much beats it all.
I've heard about that.
No, Scots do it. They do it here in the village.
Yep. Up next on Morning's Edition, the presidential palm pilot, comedian Judy Gold, and the countdown to democracy. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Stu Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. It's Wednesday. We're doing all right. It's Morning Sedition. We got comedian Judy Gold's coming by, and we'll offer a helping hand to that prenatal democracy Iraq. That's all coming up. I got Mark Riley here. I got Stu Ellicott here.
Hello.
It's been a very challenging and engaging morning because of... You know, I'm still getting emails. I don't know where people are misunderstanding this, Mark. I know there are Christian liberals, and I know there's a lot of Christians out there that, you know, are Democrats. I know that. But what I am talking about is the fanatical extremists that this president panders to whenever he possibly can. The core voting bloc, he's down there at the Southern Baptist Convention being piped in on video to, you know, to get 8,000 people to go, yay, fags are bad. They shouldn't be happy. No married fags. And they're also trying to get no killing babies that aren't babies yet. That's bad. They're in the womb and they want to sing and be happy Christians. No killing them. And no killing the cells that are almost babies either. That's bad. They're all bad. And he rallies to these people. Those are the Christians I'm talking about. And you can also have, you know, all the opinions you want. I'm not knocking that, you know, and I'm not trying to alienate Christians. It's just like there's this reflexive self-checking that goes on with a lot of liberals. Also, a side note, I will retire the word retarded for slang. You know, mm-hmm. I will retire that. The woman has made her point. Retarded on the back, it's gone. No more retarded on the air. Okay, and the other thing, here, let's. I got some other email. Oh, yeah, okay.
I thought that was...
You know why people... You know what it is?
Here you go. Mark, would you enjoy using... Oh, no, that's not the one I wanted to... Hey, where is it?
Don't worry.
I like this one. Hey, seditioners, I'm an American expat in Bangkok without a single evangelical nutbag within 1,000 miles. It is so great. Please keep up your rants against them. Although they do have a right to their beliefs, they do not have a right not to be mocked for their beliefs. Yeah. But also, there's just these, you know, this idea that, you know, that I am going to create some sort of backlash. I mean, I'm not making fun of faith per se. There is religious extremism in this country that is equally as dangerous as the religious extremism that's, you know, ruining the Muslim world and fighting us. And you can't pander that religious extremism. We shouldn't be fighting holy wars in the year 2004. It's ridiculous.
People are touchy about faith. Let me tell you a real quick story. I had a buddy years and years ago. Guy named Merlin Langley. They used to call him Smooth because he was the greatest dancer I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He was a party goer par excellence. We used to go out. We worked together in the post office. We used to go out after work, like at 2 o'clock in the morning, party till dawn, the whole nine yards. One day I go by his house, and on his in his bedroom he's got a Reverend Ike prayer cloth. Right.
Yeah.
Now I, you know, being somewhat like you back in that time, started mocking him immediately.
Right.
Reverend Ike, yeah. What's wrong with you? What are you, crazy? And he looked at me with a face that was like of impending doom, said, hey, man, don't mock Reverend Ike.
Right.
You know, and what he's saying essentially was not don't mock Reverend Ike, don't mock my faith. That's what he was saying. And that's what people get touchy about, that sort of thing. I understand it, and, you know, I believe in total religious tolerance. But when it comes to defining Christianity for me, don't do it.
Here's a more telling story about the real faith of this country. It was interesting. I did a show. I think I might have told this story a while ago before I don't know. But I was doing a show at a comedy club, and I didn't know that the room had been rented by by Tanqueray Gin. Did I tell this story?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
you did.
I think
but
tell it again.
It was a while ago.
And, you know, the comedy club owner, like they had that, remember Mr. Jenkins, the ad campaign Tanqueray had? They had Mr. Jenkins all over the place in the room. And I felt kind of screwed up about being used for corporate, you know, function that I didn't know I was going to be doing.
Corporate tool.
Right. But so here the club owner comes up to me and goes, look, man, I would never censor you. Okay, dude, you can make fun of, you know, anything you want. You can make fun of Jesus, God. You know, I know you do that sometimes. But just do me a favor tonight. Don't make fun of Mr. Jenkins. All right, just lay off Mr. Jenkins. You know, have a little respect for the corporate deities that actually run this planet. That's the thing I don't understand about religious fanatics and extremism is that they're willing to forgive Bush for his horrendous transgressions in letting corporate fraud exist and not, you know, taking action and imprisoning, you know, corporate who bilk millions of working people out of their savings, out of their, you know, their 401ks who make their life miserable, but he gives them back this weird moralizing God that wants to deny people their rights in the form of gay marriage, in the form of abortion rights, and that placates them. They don't realize for some reason that it's his very policies that are making their life miserable, but they refuse to acknowledge that.
Well, they're mixing politics and religion in such a way that it benefits the politician. That's why Bush went to the Vatican and said, hey, can you help me out? That's why he's speaking to the Southern Baptists, which we'll talk about a little bit later. His entire scenario here is constructed to bring religionists to the polls for his political benefit.
They're being used. He's using people.
Of course.
And that's all I'm trying to say. You know, you can have whatever faith you want, you know, and I'm all for it. And certainly the liberal umbrella or tent or circus, whatever the hell you want to call it, is big enough to have everybody on a trapeze and having their own little show.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and this story, for some reason, it's bothering me, this whole Paul Johnson thing.
It's heinous. It's horrendous.
It's heinous. The clock Haunting. Is running on this deadline. Insurgents say they'll kill him in 72 hours unless dozens, if not hundreds of people are freed by the Saudi government. The Saudi, of course, Saudis say that they will not negotiate with terrorists. And there's something about, you know, the almost finality of what's going on here.
Yeah.
The idea that, you know, obviously, you know, human life is sacred. And losing a human life, whether it's in Afghanistan or Iraq or Saudi Arabia or wherever, I think does really diminish us all. I'm not trying to be Pollyannish. But the idea that now, you know, this guy's family in South Jersey is watching people on cable television speculating about how long he has to live is a scary, scary. I can't imagine being a family member of somebody in that situation.
I think it's just for everybody, for them particularly, and the fact that they found out about it through the media.
Yeah.
But the fact that it speaks is a powerful symbol to our sense of powerlessness over what is happening in Iraq, is that the government will not negotiate on this. They've made it clear they will not negotiate with terrorists. Saudi Arabia will not negotiate. The demands that the terrorists are making for his release, which is that, you know, that they release hundreds of prisoners in three jails, is not something that, you know, is going to happen.
No.
Realistically. And so everybody has to stand by, and you have to hope people are going to stand by and can be rational and reasonable, but yet it's the ultimate challenge if there's a repeat of the same thing that happened to Nick Berg, the internet, or it's kind of televised, then there's absolutely going to be an unleashing of kind of an anger and why couldn't somebody do something. It's very hard to make people come to terms with their powerlessness.
You know, this is another Al-Qaeda franchise, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that there are
inspired by, I believe. Yes, didn't they say
inspired by
Al-Qaeda?
You know, Al-Qaeda is a very loose-knit confederation of people. It's not an organized militia. They don't hold periodic meetings in different buildings somewhere.
Are they willing to let, I guess, the name that people just want to call themselves the name?
Yeah.
These terrorists want to, you know, all be associated with the name, and certainly that makes it even more ominous and frightening that, you know, whether or not they're, you know, talking to each other or not, that you know, they're all claiming to be of the same organization.
Well, their unifying force here is the hatred of the House of Saud. They don't describe themselves as Al-Qaeda of Saudi Arabia. What they call themselves is Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula. It's a very important difference in language there. They reject the House of Saud. They think the House of Saud is corrupt, that they don't practice true Islam. They have a whole list of grievances against the House of Saud, and that's what we see going on here.
So it's a grievance against them for their Wahhabism, for their you know,
Letting the Americans park there.
Yes, and it's also, really, it's anti-Americanism as well. I mean, it's no coincidence. This is in the same week that we have a poll, the first poll, out from showing that Iraqis, a majority of Iraqis, want U.S.-led coalition out. They have lost confidence. They don't have confidence in the U.S. troops or in the coalition troops, and they think they would be safer without them. That's really alarming, and that speaks to a failure on the, by the coalition, by the administration, to actually kind of sit down and talk to people and have some kind of cultural understand. I mean, God knows what it would take, maybe, you know, town meetings or something to try and reassure people that they are doing a decent job. They failed to do that.
Was there ever some sort of desire to have the Americans there? I mean, you're saying that, like, all of a sudden they've just changed and they want the Americans out. It doesn't seem like they ever had the hearts and minds or that there was ever much support on behalf of the population at large to have the Americans.
Only if it had been a brief in and out. The longer it went on, the worse it got.
They were never welcomed. Still ahead, the president's palm pilot, Judy Golden, right here on Air America Radio. Nineteen past the hour, it's Mark Maron with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
I got the thing from the guy. My guy in the Oval Office is getting me downloaded the presidential schedule from the presidential palm pilot, and I think he's going to have to, you know, take it easy in there. They're on to him. 8 o'clock a.m. Wake up. Stay on message. Iraq had ties to Al-Qaeda. Keep at it. We'll make this one work. 9 o'clock a.m. Fly to Florida. Ask pilot to fly over Grand Canyon this time. 10:30 a.m. Address military personnel, Tampa, Florida. Ask if you can parachute off a Hummer. That's crazy. 11:40 a.m. Meet with CENTCOM and SOCOM representatives. Nod and promise them money. Find out what they do later. 12:15 p.m. Meet with the families of fallen soldiers. Try to squeeze out a tear. 12:17 p.m. Remind them that Iraq had ties to Al-Qaeda. 12:19 p.m. Leave quietly, then cut their survivor benefits. 3 o'clock p.m. Resolve Saudi Arabian Al-Qaeda hostage situation. A tax cut should do it. 5 o'clock p.m., look in mirror, remind self that Iraq has ties to Al-Qaeda. 6:15 p.m., publicly congratulate NBA champs, the Swing State Detroit Pistons, for soundly beating Blue State L.A. Lakers. 9 p.m., bedtime prayers, remind God that Iraq had ties to Al-Qaeda.
Oh, yeah.
Getting on with it. Kerry, he's running for president, he said, in Atlantic City, New Jersey. I am running for president because I want an economy that strengthens and expands the middle class, not one that squeezes it. I'm running for president because we have to put the country back in a place of responsible leadership. He's getting there.
It sounds like those, I'm running for president because, when you send in the answers in five words, there's competitions on the back of cereal packets.
I'm running for president because health care is not a benefit for the wealthy or the elected or the connected. I'm running for president because I know that we could be a hell of a lot stronger in the world if we were to secure our freedom. I'm running for president because I believe we can build an even more effective military.
He's hitting all the points.
He's hitting all the points, but I got a question for you, Mary.
But he's got to riff the O. I'm running for president because it kind of rolls.
It rolls.
I'm running for president.
Now, if Kerry wins, all right, and I'll be an optimist, when Kerry wins.
Yes.
Suppose he has to say between November and the day he's inaugurated that the Kerry administration will commit 300,000 troops to Iraq. In other words, increase the current strength from about 138,000 to 300,000, which is what General Eric Shinseki originally said would be needed.
No way.
I'm just asking. Suppose he said it.
Yeah.
Would people criticize him for it?
But why would he say that? I mean, they would have needed that number of troops to do the job effectively at the beginning of the war. But there's no. Why would people accept that now when, you know, the word coming out of Iraq is that people don't want any troops in there at all?
Well, that's the Iraqi people. Nobody pays attention to them. I'm talking about Americans.
Well, you know, there's always been this question of, like, you know, why did George Bush, you know, cut taxes when we were at war? Because I think that this administration has had a fundamental problem in really selling this war to the American people. That's why the constant repetition of the Al-Qaeda-Iraq connection, which is not even true, this constant reselling of this war because people really doubt the integrity of the reason and the integrity of the mission. Terrorism is up. The war is chaos. People are shooting their their officials in Iraq. You know, everything is falling apart over there, and this guy is constantly trying to ride the fact that, you know, he's the anti-terrorist guy. He's the one that's going to secure everything. And I think that if somebody came in with a real plan for a pullout, this you know, sort of June 30th date, it's symbolic. It ultimately doesn't mean
anything. Well, that's a stick figure pullout date. But the reason why, and I think there are some people who are advising Kerry further down the road to say that he may have to commit more troops, because if you commit a large force now, maybe the pullout will happen, the actual pullout.
Well, that's the thing. How do we really finish this thing up?
Well, he can only really say, if he's going to put in more troops, it has to be that he's sending in, you know, engineering corps and people who are, as a specific plan for stuff kind of rebuilding. If you just say you're putting in troops and because they look as though they're going to have some kind of military purpose, then you run the risk of just inciting more acts of sabotage, you know, anti-American attacks on military and civilian personnel stationed in Iraq and targets elsewhere in the world.
But if there are 300,000 troops there, which is just over twice the number that are there now, would they be in a better position to thwart those kinds of attacks?
Well, I think they're going to have to figure out how to restructure that situation, because clearly one of the objectives is, I don't know if anyone's admitting to it, is that they want to have troops there forever. I mean, the idea was to, you know, for these guys, the neocons wanted to have a military presence in Iraq for the rest of time. I mean, the whole idea that, like, everyone's going to come home is lip service. I mean, the agenda was to have a military presence in the region for the rest of time.
Well, yeah, because they wanted to use it as a staging area to go and start having an influence on Syria and some of the other countries in the Middle East. With an eye toward, making sure that the Israelis were no longer messed with, which is one of the neocons' purposes, whether they want to admit it or not, and to make sure that the United States has an unfettered, pass to the oil.
Right, and also they want to pull they probably want to pull the troops out of Saudi Arabia.
Right, which is a goes speak to the point that I we were discussing earlier, that, you know, that's a mistake in their plan to try and spread democracy and use Iraq as this kind of landing stage to stabilize the region and bring kind of democratic elections. They should be concentrating on Egypt and diplomacy kind of with Egypt and the place that is the kind of cultural and political driving force for the Arab world, the intellectual driving force for the Arab world. They should be out there on Arab-speaking network television explaining what they're doing. There should be much better diplomatic and cultural relations. They can't just go through the wallet of the Middle East. They can't. It's so obvious that it's about kind of oil and Saudi Arabia.
Right. The one thing you didn't say is that, is Egypt the military power of the Middle Eastern world, of the Arab world? No. So, I mean, that's...
They're not weaklings either.
Right, but, this is a flexing of military might, you know, to sort of try to buckle the entire Arab world under their, you know, under their will, the American will.
Oh, yeah.
And the main threat is, you know, to them is Syria and Iran.
Well, the other thing is, of course, if Kerry does have to commit a larger number of troops, and believe me, this is going to come up sooner or later. If he has to commit a seriously large number of troops, A, where is he going to get them from?
Well,
because
exactly.
The armed forces are already stretched pretty thin. But B, can he bring them in and pull them out on a timetable that works?
But doesn't he have to be kind of smart about getting out existing troops who are kind of fed up with being there?
Rotating. We've
been told in the last few weeks that those who were within a certain number of weeks of leaving are not going to be able to leave now. I don't see how you can boost to 300,000. You need to just take out a chunk of those who are there and replace them with other people, and that's hard enough.
Or allow them to clone. I mean, clearly, this is coming down to an issue of stem cells and cloning, is that the Christian right is going to have to make some sort of allowance for cloning if we're going to have the properly equipped military.
Well, let's look at some realities here, though. Let's look at a reality. A, the Iraqi police force is in absolutely no position to maintain order inside that country. None.
Exactly.
Oh, are you kidding?
Think about this for a minute.
Yeah.
What would be the Americans' chief function if they did increase them and balkanize the armed forces to 300,000?
Training.
It would be a policing/training situation. They would have to be there to maintain some level of order.
But now, but that training would be like this. Would you shoot them? Did you shoot them? Oh, God. All right.
Yeah, we're going
to see. Plus, they have to get to a point where they have convinced the Iraqi people that they actually... that they have confidence in the Iraqi police, too.
But see,
there's a whole kind of fighting for the minds of the Iraqi people.
But see, here's
the
other side of the equation here. When New York City had 28,000 cops, there were 2,000 murders a year here. When they had 40,000 cops, the number of murders dropped to 600. Think about that for a minute. If you give them, if you have a large policing force inside a country, he may be able to pull off increasing the troop strength with a definite pullout date if he's smart about how he has them going in to maintain order. Because without maintenance of order, you have civil war in that country, no matter what else happens and no matter how many troops are there.
And they're also in the position now to, you know, they're trying to manage a certain amount of diplomacy,
yeah,
you know, to not cause more trouble. So the amount of order they're you know, really able to contain is in light of this diplomacy, like with al-Sadr and other people. They're,
yeah,
trying to really build a government. So if that gets into place and Kerry is president, which he will be, and is able to really work with an international coalition and provide an international policing force, it might really work out.
But the majority of Iraqis want representative government. It's going to be that government that decides what happens, not no U.S. politician.
Uh-huh.
Coming up, comedian Judy Gold, the liberal agenda, and the countdown to democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Here we go. It's Mark Maron with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. What a day it has been so far, and now it's only going to get more exciting because in the studio is one of my favorite people in the world, the comedian Judy Gold from Tough Crowd, from HBO's thing in the movie thing. From
the thing? Thanks.
She's been on everything. You know, she's funny.
Yeah, that's great.
Nice intro. How long have you been doing stand-up, Mark?
Comedy Central, Clarkson
College.
All right,
shut up. I'm at Caroline's tonight, by the way.
Oh, great.
9:30.
I'll be on Tough Crowd, the television show.
You know, I'll be making more money than you. That's what the sad part of that is.
We were on it together last week.
We had fun last week.
We always have fun.
I love sitting next to you on that show.
Isn't it fun because we kind of touch each other?
Did you shoot?
I didn't want
to. He runs over. I said shoot.
Well, they're a little touchy around here.
Yeah,
I didn't mean to break that to you. You didn't know?
I just read the memo you got about the words you can't say. The fact that there's someone here who's like an executive that has to type in these words is just hilarious.
Could you please remind the professional comedian that she can't cuss on radio or television?
Yeah, because I had no clue.
Yeah, I mean, we're really in the dark about this.
Because when I did The Tonight Show, boy, I was filthy.
Yeah, they asked you back.
They did. Actually. I don't mean your
did you know that
attitude.
Our president...
What?
That our president spoke to the
He's not my president.
To the Southern Baptist Convention and over video, like Big
right.
Brother, and told them that he's going to amend the Constitution against gay marriages.
He's great. That's a really important issue while people are dying in Iraq.
Can you believe it?
First of all, the thing is, you know, I've been married. I've been with Sharon for 19 years.
Yeah.
And we have two kids. Yeah. Why is my marriage less than two people that have been together and have two kids? What am I doing that is against his marriage with his wife that
you were literally strangling something
so
in the air.
Right now.
You're maybe having more fun.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, I'm not. Anyway, so that's the point. That's the reason why we should get married, because we're just as miserable as everyone else. But but why? How am I threatening the life of other people and marriages of other people?
It's a slippery slope, Judy. I mean, you know, you let gay people get married, they're going to marry dogs and automobiles and fictional characters.
Right. I heard people take this to bestiality at one point. Yeah.
I know plenty of guys that are married to their car.
Yeah, that's for sure.
No,
Look at my motorized penis.
Good night, folks.
Hey.
It's a penis.
Uh-oh. That's okay. It's
penis,
an anatomical.
Penis, vagina. Go ahead. Is vagina on there?
No.
Nope.
Vagina, but the other thing
the
is.
The other is, I know.
Yeah.
Can I say the letter that it begins with?
Sure.
C.
Ooh.
Uh-oh.
What could you be talking about?
That someone wrote the C word is...
Uh-oh.
Oh, that's hilarious. Chris is going to take the mic away. Going to unplug
every
it.
Time,
little by little.
Every time he moves, I get all nervous. Like, oh, my God, what do? This is like being in, like, Catholic high school.
So you got any good stories?
Well.
Like, you know, with the president?
I do have a good story.
Yes.
I was on Tough Crowd with Mark, and he changed his shirt in the dressing room.
Uh-oh.
You know, in the green room,
yeah.
where Patrice comes for free food, even though he's not even on the show. Anyway, so, and the food sucks. And he takes off his shirt, and he has, like, one of those old man undershirts on.
It's called a tank top to wear underneath my cool short sleeve
shirt.
But
wait, wait, wait. Tucked into his pants and his jeans, wearing a belt with his jeans.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, he's 97. He's in assisted living. What is that?
That's so if his butt sweats, it won't show through his back.
That's because he's working out so much he's lost weight and he has to put a belt on.
He thinks he's hot. I remember when you were fat and married. You okay? Remember, to the other one.
We're talking to Judy Coles. Fat and married to the other one.
And just smoking cigarettes and being miserable.
Oh, yeah.
Can I tell them the story about you? And am I not allowed to talk about you?
No, go ahead.
He says that he's looking nervous, but go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. She loves it.
Should I? We went on this Comedy Cellar cruise, and we're sitting together. Remember this? This is like 5 years ago. Uh-oh. We're on the cruise together. We're sitting. It's like this boat that goes around Manhattan.
And you do comedy. It's like being in prison.
It's horrible. And we're it's
because if you have, if you have
you're stuck on the boat with these horrible comics.
Oh, I've seen people. It's on Wednesday. It's right next to my kayak lesson. I've seen them all queuing up to go on the boat.
Wait, you have a kayak lesson?
Yeah, but tell us about the cruise. Forget the kayak.
No, I need to.
No, forget the kayak. Anyway. We'll get back to the kayak another week.
If you have a bad set, you got to sit there with the people.
With the people!
I know.
You can't even leave!
And they're like, jump in.
Great set. It's really good.
Well, actually, you can leave. I've seen people on some of the boats around.
Jump in?
Just dive in the Hudson and swim your way back.
Or you hop onto a kayak.
Actually, let me know. I'll kayak pause next time.
Well, he's sitting there and he says to me, and I've known Mark for, we did our HBO specials together. I've known him forever. And he says to me, this is my wife, whatever.
Yeah, Kim.
Kim, I had no idea he was married.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Neither did he.
Wait a minute. I
had known him for like 10 years by that point.
Yeah,
no clue.
Yeah, that was it.
I'm like, hi.
Keeping your nuts
like, how long
have
you been married? Oh, 24 years. Oh, really?
Yeah. Didn't I show you my, I think I showed you my penis once too, didn't I?
Yes, it's nice.
Thank you very much.
And I mean, I don't have a lot to compare it to as a lesbian, but I do have two sons. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, it's a nice looking one. I
got a question about there's this long-standing myth that lesbians all drive Subarus. What the hell is up with
you know, my two lesbi friends that are really granola-ish, they just bought a Subaru. And apparently they call it a lesbaru. And they have a 7-year-old daughter that calls it a lesbaru. It's like this whole thing.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
They buy Subaru.
That would be a good advertising campaign, but I don't think that Subaru will go.
They're thrifty, the lesbians. They're thrifty. They buy the Subaru and they buy the Saturn because then you have to, you know, haggle about the price.
Yeah. But I mean, is Subaru a lesbian friendly car company?
I guess so. You know, it's like rugged, you know, with the flannel shirt.
I think that the car is actually a lesbian, isn't it?
There
are no male
are,
Subarus.
But there are some of them are marrying the Subarus. And that's what
the amendment
is. Right, we're going to take some calls at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. For whatever you want, talk to Judy, talk to me, talk about whatever you want here on Air America Radio. We're with Judy Gold, and we'll be back in a second. Yeah. 43 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott. Judy Gold is in studio. We're on Morning's Edition, Air America Radio. We're taking your calls, 866-303-2270. But right now, it's time for Countdown to Democracy. As the deadline for handover of power to the Iraqis approaches, we'd like to explore various issues and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. Today's issue is celebrity politicians. Leaders of Iraq, now you're going to be having elections, okay, eventually. Hey, all right, cut it out. It's important. Please stop. It's important for the people to have someone to vote for that they recognize. Why, here in America, being recognized is far more important than being qualified. We've chosen as civic leaders such celebrities as basketball player Bill Bradley, football star Jack Kemp, and even Austrian bodybuilder Arnold Schwarzenegger. Heck, we elected Sonny Bono, Ronald Reagan, and Fred Gandy. Hey, easy. Didn't you like Love Boat? Come on. All right, but you get the point. Now, Iraq doesn't have what you could call an entertainment infrastructure. You're a little short on sports stars and actors, but for whatever reason, you seem to make celebrities out of your fundamentalist clerics. Hey, look, whatever works. We have Pat Robertson, and you guys now apparently suggested that Muqtada al-Sadr run for office. I can see that. Wait, I thought we were on the same page here. Oh, my God, please, take it easy, all right? I understand the appeal. The al-Sadr guy is loud, angry, pretty scruffy. He's got a Jack Black thing going on. Elect him to something. He'll make political life way more interesting. And if you guys are really feeling adventurous, Saddam is still around. Now, I don't know. Now, is that a celebratory gunshot or is that bad one? All right. Well, he still has support, so do what you want. Say what you want. The guy's got star power. Now, good luck and God bless. This is day 14 in our countdown to democracy. Live free or die.
Wait, what about that? Remember that girl?
That's comedian Judy Gold.
Thank you. Yeah. That was on. There was another elected official that was on a TV show. She turned out to be a lesbian. Remember, she was a little girl on a show?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
what
yeah.
Who was that?
I don't know.
Wait a minute.
We were looking around.
Remember,
the room
it was like a
voice.
Show in the 60s, a black and white, and she played like the friend, and then she.
We'll work it out. Someone will tell us. Here, let's talk to Jenny. Yeah. Jenny in Washington, D.C. What's on your mind, Jenny?
Hi.
Hi. I was just commenting that, you know, of course the Subaru is a lesbian-mobile. They've been advertising it that way for a while.
They have?
Yeah, in DuPont Circle. I'm in D.C. In DuPont Circle, they had these ads that said, it's not a choice, it's the way we're built.
Oh, that's great.
I didn't know that.
Four-wheel drive.
That's right. Clever. That's clever. Well, thanks for calling,
Jenny.
Do you
have one?
86, she's gone. 866-303-2270.
We don't keep them long here.
I meant the car, not the, you know.
Uh-huh. That's, oh, no. We're going to, all right, Bert.
Hi, Bert.
Hello, all.
How you doing, Bert? What's going on?
Doing real well. Just want to say hello to Judy, who I remember from our Boston Comedy Club days as well.
Hi, Bert.
Bert used to work for Barry.
Oh, yeah.
Barry Katz.
Under Jason and Barry.
Do you how you doing, Bertie Wordy?
Do you have anything you want to say that could be helpful to the planet or the world?
Well, I just wanted to say, I remember Judy from the Dean campaign. I was working on that for the last year, and remember her doing a couple fundraisers, and was just wondering if she was, like, staying in touch with the governor and working and helping out with his organization, Democracy for America.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bert. What do you say, Judy? Are you?
No, I don't have time for that. But the thing, but you know, I got in trouble for at that Dean camp. We did a fundraiser, and I called the president a living, breathing piece of ass.
Yeah.
So that was all over the news, and I got hate mail and death threats, you know.
Did you get any good bookings?
No, but Jim David did.
Jim David, we had him on.
Yeah, I know.
Give us a Jim David expression.
Judy, how'd you get that? How'd you get hate mail? I want hate mail. Okay, go ahead.
Can we tell? No, we can't. Anne in New Jersey. Anne?
Hi, I just wanted to say, Judy, this is the first time I've heard you, and what I wanted to tell you is I think gay marriage is a little bit more prevalent than people would think, because I went to a PFLAG meeting last night, and half the adult children were married. So there was a lot of people that are getting married.
Oh, yeah, getting married in Massachusetts. Is that what you
mean? New Balt.
What do you mean? Yeah, what kind of meeting was it?
PFLAG, parents and friends of lesbian.
Oh, okay.
Are you a parent or friend of a lesbian and gay?
I think
no, I'm a lesbian myself.
Your first generation lesbian?
Yep.
what fun of
you don't drive a Subaru, do you?
No.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. Call us up. Hey, wait.
Interesting lately.
What
have you written interesting lately?
Who, Judy?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk to her. Let me just give out the number. Thank you for your call. 866-303-2270.
That's like something my mother would ask me. what have you been writing lately? Like, just to make conversation. Judith, what is anything interesting you've been writing?
Oh, my God.
You know, I was attracted to her, and then she said, and what have you been interested in? So then that was over. Right then.
You knew that's how the whole thing would play out. Babar in New York. How are you, Babar?
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry I can't be too lighthearted about this topic.
What topic?
Well, my concern is that even a liberal outlet like yours, it pussyfoots around the issue of the Israeli connection to American foreign policy. Mm. We got Wolfowitz and Pearl writing American foreign policy. They've written papers for Israeli think tanks about 10, 15 years ago.
Hey, Babar.
Yes.
We just talked about that a couple of minutes ago.
Right.
Well, I don't hear enough of it because this is the foundation.
Well, maybe that's our fault, but we did just before the break talk about the neoconservative agenda and mentioned the fact.
I'm really glad you did, but compared to what's out there in every newspaper from the most liberal to the most right-wing, you don't hear any of this.
You say we're pussyfooting around Israel? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, around the connection between Israel and American foreign policy, particularly this connection between the Christian Taliban and the Jewish settlement.
Okay, I know exactly what you're talking about. Thanks for your call. He's talking about the money being funneled into Israel by Christian Zionists who are trying to make the rapture happen, and they are funding the Israeli military machine because they believe that the Jews play a fundamental part
in
the second
apocalypse.
Coming. Right. And until the temple
and then we're
is
all
going
to get converted
and those of
or
us,
die.
And those of us who don't convert are going to be allowed to stay here and run delis and operate clothing stores
and
for the week.
And 7-Elevens like the boss.
Wait a minute. Is this the 12 tribes thing? Is that generally the same?
Yeah. And it's the reason why Bush is so pro-Israel.
Because he's
a right-wing evangelist.
That's why he appeals to the Christian right, because right. he could end the world, and they're ready to
but
go.
But you know what? We've done that before, haven't
let
we?
Let him go.
That
We have discussed it.
Maybe we need to talk about it.
But people
more
don't not realize, you know, Israel's the only democracy there. They bombed that nuclear reactor in Iraq. I mean, come on. You know, read your history. Israel is going to survive, and... What?
it's just so funny because you're going to leave in a minute and then you're going to go, okay, see you guys later. And emails are going to be like, where's the woman that was talking about Israel? She was.
I'm pro Israel. And I'm a Jew.
I'm okay, not. Right on. Judy
Jew.
Gold.
J-E-W-D-Y. Judy.
Thank you for coming.
I'm done?
Wait.
Oh, come on. I love you guys.
Wait, she can hang out for one more segment.
Can I?
Yeah. Okay. She'll hang out. Did he
say no and then you said yes?
We'll be back in a second with more Judy Gold. Yes, this is it. Final approach. Morning's edition. 54 after the hour. Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott, comedian Judy Gold is here. We need something from you people. We need a logo. The logo they've given us. We need you to email us your logos for Morning Sedition. Not the Morning Sedition, but Morning Sedition to sedition@airamericaradio.com. Also, you can go to airamericaradio.com, and you can get yourself some Air America Radio thongs and poodle sweaters.
Thongs.
Oh, yeah.
Thongs. Yeah, we got thongs.
Poodle sweaters.
Thong underwear or thongs?
Yeah.
No, thongs.
Thongs.
Like sandals? Thongs.
Yeah, thongs.
Like the thong underwear.
Oh, they are the thong underwear.
Yeah,
of course,
yeah.
I go right for the sandals.
Yeah, right. Didn't your mother say that? Do you have your thongs?
Yeah, your thongs.
We're
put
going
your
to
thong
the pool.
And your bathing cap with the flowers on it.
Oh, yeah.
Remember those?
Now, listen, don't send your high school logo in here, all right? Don't send something from the 1968 Trojan marching band or whatever.
Yeah, and also, 1968 would be your year of graduating
right.
high school.
We got a couple of actresses' names.
We can't pay people, but yeah. Yeah, we really want your logo.
Yes, absolutely.
Even though we can't give you anything in return apart from love.
Sheila Kuehl from the Dobie Gillis show.
That's it. That's her.
Is a state representative for...
I think California.
Is that what it is?
San Francisco?
Yeah. Someone else... Santa Monica, California. Someone else also sent in Nancy Culp.
From...
I know that.
From the Beverly Hillbillies, right?
She was on the Miss Hathaway. Yeah, I don't know if she actually ran for office, but I think people were like, I know lesbians. And
you know what you should do? You know what's a fun little thing to do? Go in your high school yearbook and then go back and look at other teachers and you'll go, oh, yeah.
Of course. That explains a lot.
Yes.
My first girlfriend, my first serious girlfriend.
Lesbian?
Yes, is a lesbian.
Really? Do you think you did that to her?
I was just going to ask
you. You know what? I look at it two ways. There's two ways I can look at it. Either either I was so good that nothing
could compare.
Or I turned her off to an entire gender.
Guys always make that equation. They can't just figure out there was nothing they could do and it was set that way and it's nothing to do with them.
Yeah,
but you know
it's
what?
Like you don't have any power, Mark.
No, but
sorry.
She was a lesbian. She had been in a relationship with a woman when I met her.
Right.
And I thought, well, this will be an exciting, challenging
thing. Well, you're
just
in touch with your feminine side and that's probably why she was attracted to you. Yeah, I am.
I'm not gay.
You didn't hurt her, did you?
I have No. It was all very, it was troubled and weird. I saw her recently and she's getting married.
To whom?
To a man.
What?
I know. I don't know.
She's not a lesbian. She's bi.
Isn't everyone bi on some
level? I think so. Why? If you had an experience?
No,
you
I haven't.
Told
not,
us about, come on.
No,
yes,
no,
you have.
No, I haven't.
Yes, you have.
Speak.
Come on. In camp.
Speak,
you're a Jew.
I had a professor in college that I got to do a comedy bit soon.
In fact, I'm bringing it on sooner than I expected.
Whoa.
Here we go. This is a liberal agenda for June 16th. Get your pens and papers. One, give a standing ovation each time you see a bus ad for Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11. Two, to support John Kerry and his wife, buy at least one jar of each of Heinz 57 varieties. Three, celebrate Pistons NBA title because it proves that accused rapists can't play basketball.
Basketball?
Four, pressure New York Times to include wedding announcements for group and or interspecies marriages. 6, today's phrase, when the deli clerk asks for here to go, yell, what does it matter? Bush is going to kill us all anyways.
Anyways?
Anyway.
Jerry. What, you, what like, is that, anyways?
You one of these people that corrects me and then tries to insinuate that I have gay experiences and I'm gay on the air?
I didn't say. I'm just saying a lot of people have that one experience. And
I did not. I almost did.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
And then they start saying anyways. It's a dead giveaway.
Thank you, Judy, for being here.
I love you. I love you, too.
I'm on Tough Crowd tonight without Judy.
I'm on at Caroline's tonight.
Caroline's 9:30.
Without Mark.
And my CD's out.
All right. Coming up on tomorrow's morning's edition, is George W. Bush psychotic, sociopathic? You have to ask. Justin Frank is the author of Bush on the Couch, and we'll get his diagnosis of Bush's state of mind. That's tomorrow's morning's edition. Right now, stick around for Unfiltered, the O. Franken Factor, Randy Rhodes, and more on Air America Radio.